Robert almost got ran over back there. Thank you. 1 Samuel 18, verse 1. This morning I mentioned the juxtaposition of these two different characters. And it's kind of a strange thing that how would I preach on two passages, though I didn't really talk about Judas, that, look at me, giving caused some of you to sleep really, really well this morning. Same people. Yet another person came up to me and said they were very much helped. And I'm like, do you realize a lot of things have very little to do with me? But in this story, this is a strange story. How does the same event prompt two totally different responses? One, friendship, love, that lasted, I would say a lifetime, but that's not true. Longer than a lifetime. And the other one was rage right up until the time he was beheaded. Very strange. We're not going to focus on that. It's just when you read this, you've got to understand that's what's going on. Verse 1. Came to pass when he had made an end of speaking unto Saul. Meaning David came back with, you know, Goliath's head in his hand. That's kind of a nice way to introduce yourself. That the soul of Jonathan was knit with the soul of David. And the idea being is it just happens. And Jonathan loved him as his own soul. And Saul took him that day and would let him go no more home to his father's house. But remember, Saul was a guy that was very ambivalent. And if you ever worked around these people or been around people like this, where one day they love you and the next day they hate you, the best thing to do is run. Because you just meet people like this. I've had people in church like this. One week I'm great. And then the next week I didn't notice their new hairdo and I'm evil. And it's just like, folks, I don't think I've had a different opinion of Tim Kowak in the 20 years I've been here. I formed that opinion early. He became the assistant pastor early, or associate, or whatever we call him. And I haven't really sat around thinking, do I like him? Do I not like him? Now, if you think that way, what's the problem? You think everybody else thinks that way. Well, they don't. They don't. Verse 3. Then Jonathan and David made a covenant because he, Jonathan, loved him as his own soul. And Jonathan stripped himself of the robe that was upon him and gave it to David and his garments, even to his sword and to his bow. And this is just old, something that would be more like what we'd call a thick belt, to his belt. It was not a girdle like I think of as a kid. Tonight we're going to look on, as I have entitled this, the forming of a friendship. Now please look at me before we begin. Tonight, I am not going to tell you anything to do. Not one thing. This text doesn't tell you one thing to do. It talks about the formation of a friendship. And that's all we're going to talk about. I don't know what I'm going to do over the next couple months. There is a possibility I will just follow up with this theme throughout 1 Samuel into 2 Samuel, all the way to the end of 2 Samuel, because Jonathan keeps coming up in the story. Or I might not. I haven't decided yet. We might spend 4 or 5 weeks just discussing the issue of friendship. Tonight is not the formation of your friendships. It's the formation of this friendship. Got it? You can learn some things, and I can learn some things, but there's no commands here. So not all of this is going to be equally applicable. Let's pray, and we'll get started. Father, I thank you for this opportunity to gather together and look at a passage that is quite helpful, quite encouraging, and in some ways quite revealing. Matters of friendship. Thank you, Father, that we have the privilege of looking at this text. Thank you that other men and women have thought long and hard about friendship, biblical and otherwise. And tonight we'll look at some of the ideas of a man that I think thought fairly thoroughly about the subject of friendship. Help us tonight to learn a few things along the way. And it would be good if we could walk away from here, our hearts being warmed in this matters of friendship. This I ask in Jesus' name. Amen. You may be seated. Jonathan and David, friendship. A smile comes across my face when I think of Jonathan and David's friendship. An extended story that starts really here in a real personal way and extends all the way to the end of the book and even extends beyond this book to 2 Samuel and actually extends somewhere in the end of, wow, how are we distracted already? To the end of David's life, friendship. I grew up, I've said this many times, I'm not going to talk about it tonight much. I grew up with the idea, and more importantly, hear me, the actual practice of friendship. But here's what you might find ironic. My mother has been at this church many times. My mother is a sweet woman, godly woman, good woman. But my mother has told me 3 or 4 times in the last 2 years, I really have never had friends. Now take a breath. Don't go to lunch. I'm going to give you an exact statement of my family. My dad had friends and my mom had family. And my mom's friends were her 2 sisters. And 1 or 2 or 3 of the sister-in-laws. But my mother has really never had friends. I didn't learn much about friendship from my mom. I don't think, coming from a big family, she ever felt the need to have a friend. Her friend is Aunt Mary. Her friend is Aunt Dot. Her friend is Aunt Catherine. Couple 2 or 3 of the other in-laws, because there was 9 brothers, 8 who lived, so there was lots of us. Is that strange to you? My mother told me she never really had friends. She has family. Dad had friends. And I saw in person what it meant. Though Dad never sat down and talked to me, I saw what it meant to be a friend. I also saw in the farm right next to us, Mr. Griesmeyer, and around the bend there was an apple orchard. Max Winnicke owned it, 2 German guys. And these guys were friends for about 40 years. I think about 40 years, and they had breakfast at one another's house for about 40 years until one of them died. Every morning, you would see one guy's tractor at the other house or the other. They drove a little Ford, you know, a small tractor, and that's the one they kind of drove around the farm on, and these men were just friends. And you say, what was in it? They just sat, talked, ate, and then went to work. They were friends. So I saw friendship in practice. I hope by the time this series is over, some of you start grasping some of this. And some of you already get more of it than I do. In your notes, this will be important for tonight. This is a narrative section, no commands. Therefore, my sermon will also be descriptive. I am not telling you what to do, especially when the King James translates and mistranslates one word. I am not telling you to do what David would have done, which is karat berit. He cut a covenant, meaning they killed an animal, cut it in 2, and made a covenant. I'm not recommending it. Now, if you have a dog you don't like or you don't like, you know, okay, I guess that's okay. Tim, we're going to talk right after the service. Next. This friendship, and we've already stated this, is juxtaposed alongside Saul's jealousy, hatred, and rage. Folks, you don't really know you have a friend until you have and problems. Friendship is not you like to go to coffee together and chit-chat and talk about the weather and talk about stupidity. Friendship is really determined and found in life, in the trials of life. We'll talk about that more later. So this friendship is always, everything about it, it's like, I think I say this in your notes. In this friendship, there are 3 characters, Saul, David, and Jonathan. The middle character is David. He's in the middle, but there's always Saul hanging over and casting a shadow over the friendship of these 2 men. always. Next. And as I say in your notes, and two very different reactions to David. One wants to kill him, and one loves him. Well, we begin number one. Now, folks, I am not telling you to practice this. I'm talking, look at me, I am talking about a text. Does everybody hear me? This is what happened. I cannot promise you this will happen in your life or won't happen. Though my guess is it probably, if you have friends, this is how it happens. Number one, this, you notice I said this, meaning David and Jonathan, this friendship was formed suddenly or quickly. The most important thing in this text is it just happened. It says, and it came to pass, when he had made an end of speaking unto Saul, that the soul of Jonathan was knit with the soul of David. It was a friendship that happened instantaneously. And it says, and Jonathan loved him, David, as his own soul. Verse 3, then Jonathan and David made a covenant because he, Jonathan, loved him, David, as his own soul. This brings up lots of questions, of which I won't answer tonight. I hope actually that you see this as an introduction to friendship and you start doing some reading, thinking, meditating on Scripture about the subject of friendship. Before I go any farther, please look at me. Who wrote the most in the Bible about friendship? Not a trick question. Who? Solomon. Now, you know what the obvious next question is. Where did he learn about friendship? Well, he saw his father and understood his father's missing of Jonathan. That friendship has long repercussions. We'll get to a verse later that you'll never understand unless you actually read the Bible and understand the Bible, and then all of a sudden the verse will make sense to you. In your notes, this brings up some questions, and I am not going to answer the questions tonight. The first question it brings up is this: are there steps or whatever? Are there steps to developing friendships? I guarantee if you go out there in the Christian market, in the pop Christian culture, you can find a book that will tell you 7 steps to finding a friend. They're all over the place, friend. And I can just hear somebody saying, here are the 7 steps. Here are the 4 prerequisites to having a friend. And we love to lay things out. Here's the problem. This great friendship just happened. Now, I think C.S. Lewis will tell you why it happened. I think he's on to something. We'll get to that a long time later in the C.S. Lewis quotes. I believe this, friend. I don't think there are 3 steps or 8 steps or 4 steps or 4 prerequisites of friendship. I don't think that's found either in the Scripture or in our life. Fact of the matter is, the most disappointing thing you will ever do is try to have... You look at a people and you look around and you look from Cliffy over here to Bambi over here to Josh back here to Stacy over here. Nobody wants to be Brian's friend. And you say, I'm going to make that person my friend, and here's my comment. Good luck. Friendships never work when you try to make a friend. They just don't. Next. This is a harder question. Can I be anyone's friend? Can I just be anybody's friend? And then, of course, folks, I'm not going to answer the question. I'm just thinking of things that bother me. I wish there was some place in the Bible that said, Ralph Warren, here's the 5 steps that you can teach people how to have friends. And here's the 7 steps that you can be anybody's friend. I'm not sure it works that way. In my lifetime, there have been 2 men that I wanted to be friends with. I'm 59 years old, and I have not been a friend of either one of those men. One of them has betrayed me at least twice, and the other one was about as interested in being my friend as I am interested in being Hillary Clinton's friend. No interest. Next. This is more serious. Can friendship happen later in life? What do you think about that? Does it normally happen later in life? No, it doesn't normally. Now, by the way, friend, Proverbs 18:24, Pastor Warren is not going to lie to you. So you might as well put this in your, you know, your handbag. If you look at the King James Version, there's a lot of italicized words in there. Is that correct? Look at it in your notes. Are you looking? A man that hath friends must show himself friendly. Every translation translates that so differently that you wouldn't even recognize the first line. But is it enough just to be friendly to someone to obtain? I don't know. So what we're going to do now is we're going to read some quotes. These are all online, so you don't even have to pray about them. You can just copy them just like I did and put them right here. You don't even have to read the book. C.S. Lewis said this, to love it all is to be... See, that's the problem. We want a friend, and what we really want is something from them, but friendship probably has a lot of vulnerability. Love anything, and your heart will be wrung and possibly broken. If you want to make sure of keeping it intact, you must give it to no one, not even an animal. Wrap it carefully around with hobbies and little luxuries. He didn't have TV in his day. Avoid all entanglements. Lock it up safe in the casket or coffin of your selfishness. But in that casket, safe, dark, motionless, airless, it will change. It will not be broken. It will become unbreakable, impenetrable, irredeemable. To love is to be vulnerable. He goes on to say in another place, friendship is unnecessary. Like philosophy, like art, it has no survival value. Rather, it is one of those things which give value to survival. And another place, and all these come from the four loves, by the way, I think you can tell that. He said, I have no duty to be anyone's friend, and no man in the world has the duty to be mine. No claims, no shadow of necessity. Friendship is unnecessary, like philosophy, like art, like the universe itself, for God did not need to create. It has no survival value. Rather, it is one of those things which give value to survival. Next, my friend, you are about to read some of the greatest thinking on friendship you have ever, ever encountered. So if you don't know this by heart, you are now crossing a divide in things you have never come across. Part of the reason we have such a struggle in our country with friendship. Lovers are normally face-to-face, absorbed in each other. Friends, side-by-side. Absorbed in some common interest. Above all, eros, which is one of the Greek words for love between a man and a woman, while it lasts, is necessarily between two only, but two, far from being the necessary number for friendship, is not even the best. And the reason for this is important. In each of my friends, there is something that only some other friend can fully bring out. By myself, I am not large enough to call the whole man into activity. I want other lights than my own to show all of his facets. Hence, true friendship is the least jealous of loves. Two friends delight to be joined by a third and three by a fourth, if only the newcomer is qualified to become a real friend. They can then say, as the blessed souls say in Dante, here comes one who will augment our loves. For in this love, to divide is not to take away. Next, friendship arises out of mere companionship. When two or more of the companions discover they have in common some insight or interest or even taste which the others do not share, in which till that moment each believed to be his own unique treasure or burden. My friend, I have never read the equal to the next line. Please look at me. I have developed two friendships in the last 10 years. Both of them, I have no reason to be their friend. I could not even figure out why they like me. We're not the same age necessarily. We're not from the same surroundings. And it all comes down to this statement. Maybe you've never experienced this. Maybe you think friendship is about emotions. Look what he says. The typical expression of opening friendship would be something like, what? You too? I thought it was only me. And all of a sudden, you have something that, by the way, friendship is, this is what some people think friendship is. I hate Lake County Baptist. We've had those kind of people here before. So they gather around them a little circle of piglets. look me in the eyes, of piglets that hate Lake County Baptist. And they think that's a friendship. How long is that friendship going to last? The only thing they share is mutual hate. My friendship isn't also looking at each other. Have you ever looked at a kid that's 12 or 13? I had a boy and a girl in my office years ago, both of them who parents came to this church at the time. And the boy said, "Pastor Warren, we're getting married." I'm like, "You're 14. We're getting married." I said, "Well, how are you going to take care of your wife?" "I'll get a job." "At 14? Do you know why they wanted to get married? Because this is what happened. They hated their home life. Parents, are you listening? They hated their home life, and they were staring at each other. What is the chances of that relationship working? Exactly zero. Even good relationships, there has to be something more than staring and going, "Oh, your hair. Oh, your makeup. Oh, your finger." Really? Ladies, if you're waiting around for that guy, not only does he not exist, he shouldn't exist. That's not really a friendship. That's not really anything but teenage stupid. Let's read the next section. The very condition of having friends is that we would want something else beside friends, that we should want something else beside friends, where the truthful answer to the question, "Do you see the same truth?" would be, "I see nothing and I don't care about the truth. I only want a friend." No friendship can arise. By the way, you ever meet a person that wants a friend? They never have one. They think friendship is about wanting. No, friendship is one day you're talking to somebody, this comes up in your life, and you realize you have certain passions that you share together. I was introduced to Emmanuel Malone by someone else. The someone that introduced me to Emmanuel Malone, he says, "I don't understand why you and Emmanuel are such better friends than we are." Well, answer the question, why are we better friends? Because we have some of the same objectives in mind. My other friend wants to have a friendship where we sit down and do this. "How are you feeling?" Emmanuel and I have a friendship. Look at me. We have a friendship about what we want to accomplish. This is what's funny. Out of the three men that have become my friends since age 39, one other person has been involved in two of them and is not a friend of either one. Friendship happens because of this. Not looking at each other or not looking and saying, "I hate my call." Friendship happens when all of a sudden, and by the way, marriage is no different. You can have the worst marriage on earth, but you better, by God's grace, have something that you're interested in together other than TV. Where the two of you have some passions that point the same direction. Let's read the rest of this. So, when someone says, "Do you see the same truth?" would be, "I see nothing. And I don't care about the truth. I only want a friend." No friend, no real friendship can arise, though affection, of course, may. There would be nothing for the friendship to be about. And friendship must be about something. Even if it were only an enthusiasm for dominoes or white mice. This statement, friend, those who have nothing can share nothing. Those who are going nowhere can have no fellow travelers. Look at me. You want to have somebody that you click with? Where are you going? Who are you? What do you want to accomplish? May I say this? Not mad at anybody. This is not even preaching. There are people in our church that I could not possibly be their friend. They would bore me to tears. I don't know what they're about. There are other people that have interests that I don't have, but it's interesting to be around someone who's interested. They have passions and ideas, and you can look with them and think about things. And other people, it's like, I don't know what. It seems like they live in a cycle of entertainment, food, sleep, and maybe work. And they don't love any of it. Oh my goodness, friend. If you don't have friends, who are you? Where are you going? Once you're going someplace, this is what happens. One day it's like this. What? You too? I thought I was the only one interested. We'll move on. This friendship was formed quickly, in a moment. That's the way friendships usually happen to some degree. I said formed. I didn't say anything else. We're talking about the text. Number two, this friendship was formed unequally. This was not exactly an equal friendship. Have you ever noticed when you read these texts, who do you think had the unequal side of the friendship? Who? David seems to be lesser of a friend. And Jonathan is the more, you know, he seems to be the one that's always engaging David. Now, we're going to talk about that, so let's read these verses together. When the friendship begins, it says, "And it came to pass, when he had made an end of speaking unto Saul, that the soul of Jonathan was knit with the soul of David, and Jonathan loved him as his own soul." Verse 3, again it says, "Because he loved him as his own soul." Chapter 20, verse 17, "Jonathan caused David to swear again because he loved him, for he loved him as his own soul." 20, verse 41, "And as soon as the lad was gone, David arose." But by the way, it sounds differently here. "David arose out of the place toward the south and fell on his face to the ground and bowed himself three times. And they kissed one another and wept with one another." And this is a strange Hebrew phrase. "And David exceeded." It is almost like David lost control of himself for his love for Jonathan. We'll come back to these a little bit later. And I'm assuming everybody knows the next text. What happened to Jonathan? Before we go further, what happened to Jonathan? He happened to make the bad mistake, God's sovereignty, of going out to battle with his dad. And what happened to Saul and all of his sons? They were all murdered. They were all killed in battle. Mm-hmm. This is David's response to that. He says, "I am distressed for thee, my brother Jonathan. Very pleasant hast thou been unto me. Thy love to me was wonderful, passing the love of women." On a personal level, I'm speaking personally. I have struggled with a question. A friend that only I pursue. By the way, I'll tell you, you'll already know this. My wife can tell you, I've talked to her about this. I've talked to several people. If I have a friend, Bill Smith, and every time we make contact, I must make contact with Bill, my question is, should I continue to pursue that person? Well, I learned something from this text. I can't answer the question for you. By the way, is that a good question? See, I think what we think is, I'm going to have this friend, whoever, and this friend is going to call me every morning. "Hello. How?" By the way, I can see it now. Brian will call me tomorrow morning. "Pastor Warren, how are you feeling? How was your night?" And when he does that, we're firing him and keeping the family. Some of us think that's friendship. But what if you have a friend that doesn't call you? Never calls you. You always have to call him. I think we can be informed some by this text. In your notes, here are some basic thoughts that I have that come from this whole circumstance. First of all, this friendship was unequal. It was more Jonathan than David. There's no question about that. Now, the next statement becomes really important, especially the second half. It was not only was unequal, but it was unequal in who initiated it. And as I see in your notes, really could initiate it. When you ask the question, why was the friendship unequal? Why was it unequal? Come on, folks. David's been chased all over the world, the land, by Saul. David couldn't say, "Saul, give me a couple days off. I want to go visit your son." The friendship in its initial aspects was unequal because of necessity. Does that mean that, now I'm going to ask a question, does that mean David didn't love Saul? There's where we get in trouble. Actually, the text seemed to indicate didn't love Jonathan. Seems to indicate David loved Jonathan as much as Jonathan loved David. But in the initial part, there's no question it was unequal. So I'll state that again. It was unequal. It was unequal in who initiated it or really could initiate it. Next, It was unequal, and who maintained it? It's always Jonathan seeking out Saul. I believe every time in the rest of the book, Jonathan always had to seek Saul out. Most of the time, David was hiding. So David could have said, you want to come out to the cave? You know, you want to come out to the wilderness where I'm hiding? It was in a position where David really couldn't do these things. Next. It was unequal in who needed it the most. It was unequal in who needed it the most. At that time, David needed Jonathan in some ways. Actually, the real thing is weird is, why did Jonathan need David? Do you remember what Saul said? As long as David's alive, you'll never be king. Don't you understand this? He says some horrible things, but he says this is your shame and your mother's shame that you're letting him be your friend. Jonathan didn't seem to benefit. I said seemed. I don't think friendships work like Saul. Well, Saul, by the way, how many friends did Saul have? Yeah, he had one. Saul. He was in love with Saul. We continue. But it was not unequal in love and feelings. When you read the text and you read 1 Samuel 20, verse 41, when it says David exceeded, friend, David was overcome with emotions. So this wasn't David kind of loved Jonathan and Jonathan really loved David. It was because of the weird circumstances it seemed to be unequal. Now, I want to say this. Everybody here knows I like Tim Kowak, even though I picked on him. I need to confess publicly that I should not have picked on him today about what I did. I was rebuked when I went home, not because I picked on him. I like to do that. I was rebuked because I thought, I don't even know if I know my brother's girl's husband's names. And I was picking on him because he didn't know your middle name. I don't know anybody's middle name except my two children and my two grandchildren. I think I know my grandchildren's middle name. Yes, I do. Yes, I do. I do. Ooh, I better. Now, would you take a breath? If I had to depend on him calling me, exactly, you know this, don't you? I think Tim uses a phone every 5 or 6 years in emergency circumstances. He will answer the phone. I don't know why he won't call, but Kirk Mellon, my associate pastor from St. Louis, we're good friends, we have great conversations. Every time I call him, it's like a wonderful conversation. You know how many times he's called me since 1996? Why is that? He's like Tim. There are more, I don't know, they don't like to use the phone, more introverted. I don't know what it is. By the way, he's so bad, he didn't call his own brother. His mom either. Now that's really over the top. Tim. Every year or so. I hope your daughters are not like you. Next in your notes. So my point being is, friend, it was not unequal in love and emotions or feelings. There was plenty of love and feelings both directions. It was also not unequal in the long run. Initially, because of the circumstances, the friendship seems to be unequal. It seems to be more Jonathan than David. But as things work out, even in 1 Samuel and definitely by 2 Samuel, you realize, no, this is much more equal than I thought. See, what I have learned is some people just don't make calls. My wife is this way. She can talk herself out. I'll say, call so-and-so. Well, it's 9 o'clock at night. They might be in bed. I don't care if you're in bed. You're getting a call from me anyhow. And then after 9, then she starts back, well, it's 8:45. They might have gone to bed early. The only person that goes to bed that early is Duncan because he gets up before I go to bed. People, in the long run, though, David's love and friendship for Jonathan was just as strong. Lastly, we will not demonstrate this tonight. This will be in the future. It was not unequal in the commitments. David most assuredly followed up on his commitments, did he not? What was Jonathan's son's name? Mephibosheth. And by the way, two different locations in 2 Samuel, David protects Mephibosheth and his children. This lasted more than Jonathan's life. So we have stated tonight, and by the way, I want to say, and I'm going to hurry, I don't have an answer. If you have a friend, let's pretend you have a friend from some school or wherever, and this friend never calls you, should you maintain contact? I don't know. My guess is this. A lot of times things are not equal for lots of reasons you don't understand. As long as you're having a friendship, talking about ideas, encouraging one another, moving forward, I think you maintain the friendship. The guy you're looking at is not good at many things. I am very good at one thing, maintaining friendships. Kevin Bowder told me when we were in Upper Wisconsin, he said, "You and I wouldn't have a friendship, but you always call me." Now, you think Dr. Bowder, smart guy, big guy, genius mind, I don't call him because I'm trying to impress him. We have a lot of things we'd like to talk about in common and do in common. But he is more like this guy's personality. He doesn't call anybody. When do you realize that, friend? Get over this. Well, if they don't respond, you know, I sent them a letter and they didn't send me one back 38 years ago. Okay. Number three, this friendship was formed formally. It had a formal aspect to it. Now, I am not telling you you need to do what Jonathan and David did. I put Hebrew in here for my sake, not for yours. But the text says Jonathan and David made a covenant. Friend, please look at me. In the King James, it always says made. Hebrew never says made. It always uses a Hebrew word that means to cut something. Now, the question is, did they just make a covenant or an agreement, shake hands, or did they actually do what the text says, which would be take an animal, cut it in two, and make some promises to each other, and it's one of those real solemn kinds of things. I don't know, but every time it's mentioned, it uses the same language. Karat berit. He cut a covenant. It's a very formal thing in your notes. Chapter 20, verse 8. Therefore thou shalt deal kindly with thy servant. This is, of course, Jonathan speaking to David. For thou hast been brought thy servant into a covenant of the Lord with thee. This is David speaking to Jonathan. We'll get to this in future weeks. David says, by the way, if there's iniquity in me, you kill me yourself. You know, friendship only goes so far. Friendship doesn't mean you cover for criminal behavior, murder, and stuff of that nature. Chapter 20, verse 14. It says, and thou shalt not only while yet I live show me the kindness of the Lord that I die not. This is Jonathan speaking to David. But also thou shalt not cut off thy kindness from my house forever. No, not when the Lord hath cut off the enemies of David, everyone that from the face of the earth. So Jonathan made a covenant. Now, in this, the King James is correct. Covenant is implied. It just has the word karat, which means to cut. It doesn't have the word for covenant, but it just says he cut something. But the idea is he made a covenant with the house of David, saying, let the Lord even require it at the hand of David's enemies. And Jonathan caused David to swear again because he loved him, for he loved him as his own soul. Chapter 23, verse 17, I believe this is the last time Jonathan and David see each other. And it says, and he said unto him, fear not, for the hand of Saul, my father, shall not find thee. And thou shalt be king over Israel, and I shall be next unto thee. And that also Saul, my father, knoweth. And they two made a covenant. You have again those same words, karat and berit, before the Lord. And David abode in the wood, and Jonathan went to his house. I'm going to give you some ideas here and we'll move forward here. Some thoughts. Friendship is certainly always about more than mutual hatred. I don't think many people in this room have this problem. Please look at me. But if you have a friend and the only purpose of your friendship is gossip and who you don't like, tonight, drop the friendship. Look at me. Did you hear me? Tonight, You don't need friends whose only purpose is I hate somebody else. Is that a friendship? I find more people at work spend their whole time talking about the boss. Look at me. If you want to criticize your boss, shut your mouth and become the boss. Quit the garbage. And don't get a little circle of people that you go, what? I think that's what people think friendship is. Strange. Next. Friendship is about more than mutual fun. You know, it's not about, well, we met together and went to Six Flags, or we met together and went fishing. That's really not friendship in and of itself. In your notes, friendship is about this: shared ideas, interest, passions. The people who are truly your friend are people that you share interest, ideas, and passions with. Friendship is about each other's futures. So when you come along somebody, I have friendship. I'm a pastor. I don't know how you think I'm supposed to relate to people. And nobody tells you, and there's no way of finding this in a book. But the way I look at people here in this church is I'm here to move you farther down the road. So when Dada over here starts in this church as a member and then becomes a deacon, then abandons us for how many years? For far too many years. He goes off to Washington State, and then he comes back. He becomes a deacon again, and now he's a pastor. It's not because it's Dada. I want every male and woman in this church. Look at me. My role as a friend of yours and a pastor is to bring you farther. I'm not really interested in you being the same as you were the day I met you. What other purpose would I have? Yes, I'm the guy that recommended he go to seminary. Of course, he has the mind for it and the heart for ministry. Are we friends? Well, duh. But we're not friends because he eats stuff that I don't really care that much for. He's not as bad as Dave. Nobody's as bad as Dave. See, Dave sits over there quiet. Dave eats everything. Right, Dave? But may I say this? You know where Dada and I have our relationship? We're looking at some of the same things. We want to accomplish some of the same things. We have the same passions. When I walk in here, do you realize I've been here 20 years? I've never told Duncan one thing what to do, because he had it before I got here. He has the same desires for our young people. Friendship is not about looking at each other and being nasty to other people. It's not about the gossip you do. It's about those passions we share in common and each other's future. Doesn't that make sense? Look at me. Doesn't that make sense? Cliffy, when you decided to come back here, what is your requirement? To go to seminary, correct? Why? Because I know you have the mind, you have the personality, and you have the desires to not only go to seminary, but to use that to help the Philippines. Folks, what else are we here for? We're here to move this thing forward. We're not here to look at each other and be a mutual admiration society. Did you notice my new lip gloss? Rhonda. Thank you, Rhonda. I like you. Next in your notes, friendship is about each other's well-being. It's about each other's well-being. Friend, there are verses in your notes that are the great verses on friendship. A friend loveth at all time, and a brother is what? And it's not making a contrast between your brother and your friend. Those are the same. But look at the next verse. I'm going to ask you, where do you think Solomon learned this from? Thy friend and thy forsake not. Where do you think he learned that? A guy by the name of David and a guy by the name of Jonathan and Jonathan's descendants, Mephibosheth, and the children. And he grew up watching his own dad, look at me, be a friend to people. Now, I'm not going to be funny. I can be funny, but I'm not going to be funny. Last weekend, Noel went through a grueling process on Sunday or Saturday, and we voted to ordain him. We laid hands on him. Can I ask you a question? Does he have any friends? Who drove from Virginia Beach to be with him one day? I don't know if Romeo comes up to him and calls him friend. Does he call you friend? He does. He calls you who? Compadre. But by the way, Romeo doesn't have to tell him, you're my friend. A friend loveth at all times. Young folks, I grew up with a dad that lived this out his whole life. His whole life. And he had friends that never benefited him at all. His three best friends never benefited my dad one nickel. But he was their friend. Two of them were from childhood, Frank and Lindy. I never met Lindy. They didn't live good lives. They led bad, especially Lindy was a drunk. He lived a rough life, but my dad was his friend. Look at me. Do you understand friendship? This is what I mean by friendship. When Lindy died, my dad paid for the funeral. My dad paid for the burial. My dad paid for the tombstone because Dad said, my friend should have a tombstone. His younger brother, Frank, which moved to the Nations in Oklahoma. He married a lady that was of Native American blood there named Dean. I only met them once. When Frank died, my dad did the same for him. And then there was the widow. She's not only not a friend, she's nothing. My dad went out to Oklahoma, brought her back so she could visit the whole family. She died shortly thereafter, and guess what he did? He buried her and put a tombstone there. My friend, I don't understand what some people think friendship is. We had a great meal. I can have a great meal without you. Friendship is rather important. Dada has at least one friend. He might have more. Lastly, and this will be picked up on in future weeks, I have said tonight this friendship was formed suddenly or quickly. It was formed unequally because of the necessity of what was going on. It was formed formally. They made a covenant. And lastly, it was formed concretely and positively. Jonathan did very concrete, positive things for his friend. It says he stripped himself of the robe that was upon him. By the way, royalty wore different kind of clothing. Do you understand what this would do to Saul? Saul's trying to kill David. And what's Jonathan doing? Giving him clothing that royalty wore. Because a friend is not a friend because we like to criticize other people, or it's a mutual admiration society where we look at each other's hair and say, oh, it's you have such a nice hairdo. Pastor Kwok and I talk about this every Monday. On Tuesday when we go out, we'll say, oh, Tim, you got a nice haircut. I'll close with the last statement in your notes. Real friendship is inevitably elevating. It lifts people up. Let's pray. Father, thank you for this time tonight.